with me on my wicked ambition. Bitch, like I told you once before, I be the one that's on that thing.
Control, trip up with diamonds and gold. Players all up in my soul. I bust a ranch in the road. Up in the VIP seat, these bros been waiting to see me. I hope they drink at my G's. Can't leave with less than the G. I'm scoping out some mortality. Need some new queens for my palace. The old ones that I just fired, they hating on me like malice. Soon as I hit the front door, they scope the gold around my collar. I'm here to come up on loot. I can't even spare a dollar.
I got a list on my wrist. Can you please get some of this? Some haters wanna take my place. Some rest be taking riding the clip. I can't be stopped. The juice gon' shine. The truth be spoken in my rhyme. I'm living good and feeling fine. I'm days I'm clean. They drinking wine. Just fold it up. I fold it up. The bottles pop. Put in my cup. The players who work from 9 to 5. I own the corner. Post it up. We still get ball. The juice and fall. The deals we make. The shots we call. Entrepreneurs on worldwide tour.
The only thing we say is cheap. Not wrong.
And see who comes more.
Girl, here we go now.
Hello, Vancouver. Welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show on UBCCITR 101.9 FM on a beautiful, warm, balmy. It's almost balmy today. My name is Ifni Lachance, and I will be talking about bicycles and various tangential topics as we go through the hour together. Also, I'm joined in the studio by David Ripa, who's extremely busy at the moment, so he won't say hello, but he will say hello a little bit later. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. It's been an exciting couple of weeks, and we missed May Day because we didn't have a show that day. So what we're doing is we're making up for lost time, and so our theme today is going to be items touching on bicycles and labor. And so we'll be talking to a few people on the air, and you're more than welcome to call in as we go through the show. The number is 604-UBC-CITR. If you have any questions, things like that, comment, anything you'd like to bring to the table. Also, if you have any events to announce, please call them in. And one other thing I will say is you can contact us anytime at pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com. We also have a blog, and it's pedalrev.blogspot.com, and it's sadly a little bit out of date. However, there are lots of shows that are available on the podcast, citr.ca. If you hit podcast, you will see some of our archived shows. So that being said, let's get right into things. We're going to get a gentleman on the line by the name of Steve Hunt. He's the District 3 Director for the Steelworkers of Western Canada. And you may be wondering, what do steelworkers have to do with bikes? Well, most bicycles are made, of course, of steel. And when we talk about where we get bicycles and how to make ethical choices, one of the things that we should be probably considering, because a lot of bicycle riders are thinking about greater community, one of the things you may like to take into consideration is how those bikes are made, where they come from, what the working conditions are like under which workers are toiling to make that thing that you worship that lives between your legs. So we've got Steve Hunt on the line. Steve, can you hear us?
I can, Ifni.
Oh, fabulous. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I know you're a really busy guy, and we just have started our show, so folks may not actually know very much about some of the issues that we'd like to talk about with you that pertain to the domestic bicycle industry and the steel therein. So can you just give people a bit of an overview about some of the issues that the steel workers would like people to be aware of?
Well, sure, Ifni. I mean, specifically about bicycles, we used to manufacture bicycles, or what I say we, the steelworkers, or members of the steelworkers, used to manufacture bicycles for the Canadian market and the U.S. market, and as of now, just about all of that manufacturing is gone. It's now exported to China, Vietnam, Malaysia, and countries like that.
And can you maybe comment on when this scaling back of the domestic industry kind of rolled in, and under what conditions it happened?
It's been rolling out of the country, or jobs, manufacturing jobs have been rolling out of the country basically since the free trade agreement came in NAFTA, and then subsequent trade agreements with other countries. It's been a nonstop exodus of jobs, probably for 10 or 12 years now, mm-hmm. in real effect, and there seems to be no end to it.
And what are some of the things that the steelworkers have recommended be done to allay the kind of outsourcing of bicycle manufacturing?
Well, we've asked our federal government to step up to the plate and try to protect, to the extent possible, domestic jobs in Canada. And for example, we've asked that before jobs are exported and the government fails to enforce any type of regulation, mm-hmm. that would protect those jobs, that they actually consult with labor so that we can try to the extent possible, be competitive. And when I say that, we can't compete with the Chinese worker. And I should qualify this as well. We don't have any dispute with workers from other countries. In fact, we support them. Mm-hmm. They have to eat and provide for their families as well, but they're being exploited by manufacturers who otherwise would manufacture in Canada. Mm-hmm. And the price of bicycles, for example, don't go down. They stay up at comparable prices as they were in Canada, and the profit margin just extended to the shareholders of those corporations. So, you know, we're saying that we're happy to try to compete, but we can't compete for a bowl of rice at the end of the day, you know, and pennies per hour. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they make something like 25 cents an hour. We'll be talking a little bit later in the show about some of the conditions that these workers overseas are working under. It's interesting because I know that tariffs have been recommended, and I read an article where there was kind of an alarmist statement saying that, well, if people are talking about adding tariffs that will add 30% of the price markup to bicycles, making it possibly unaffordable for people, and people will stop buying bicycles. So knowing the commitment levels of some of the people that I know, I don't think that stopping buying bicycles is a necessarily realistic outcome. But also, the tariffs are being recommended for some of the lower brackets of bicycles, not necessarily the more high-end things.
Yeah.
And can you maybe speak to... So, have there been any victories in relation with government on a governmental level?
Not at all. No, we've lobbied. We've put people on Parliament Hill, as we say, putting workers first. But up until now, absolutely no response from government on how to protect jobs. In fact, it seems to us that the government's lost on all of this, and it's just not in the bicycle sector. It's right across the entire board of manufacturing. We're seeing such an exodus of jobs right now. It's hard to contemplate because it's 300 here, 500 here, and across the country as big as Canada. It's hard to put them all together, but it's literally thousands and thousands of jobs that have gone, and we can't compete. Hmm. It's not that we don't want to, but we can't. And again, we can't compete with a country that has no social standards, no environmental standards, no unemployment insurance, no workers' compensation, on and on and on. You can't. Mm-hmm. We can't be in the same market. And that's what our government fails to understand.
Mm-hmm. And also, we can't compete in the sense that if those things are important to us, then we need to recognize that they're important for everyone. And maybe what we can start talking about is that if action isn't being taken at a governmental level, then actually consumers can start to get involved in the process themselves, and put pressure on their local distributors, to which in turn will hopefully keep the ball rolling up the line.
No, and that is a good thing, and consumers can take action, and a good thing to do is just simply ask, where is the bike made, and under what conditions is it made, and who's making the profit? It's not a Chinese company making the profit. It might be Walmart or somebody like that.
Some of the big boxes.
Sure, and if they're dictating under what conditions the bikes are made, they can dictate, for example, labor standards should be increased so that the workers that are making them have some protection. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't see a demonstrable price difference between a bike that used to be made in Canada to a bike that's now made in China or Malaysia. It's the same price they're charging.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's making an enormous profit off the backs of somebody.
Interesting. And I guess another thing that people can consider doing, too, is supporting local artisans. So there are people who do build hand-built bikes.
Absolutely.
And so people might want to start kind of researching those, asking around. A lot of times local networks can assist people in finding those individuals. And we do have them in Vancouver. There are people who are endeavoring to kind of bring about a bit of a renaissance in the artisanship of bicycles, which originally were handmade. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. And I wanted to ask you as well, if there are other kind of greater concerns as far as the origin of steel goes that cyclists can kind of be aware of, either environmentally or also as far as the manufacturing industry goes.
Yeah, I think so. We have no way of knowing, for example, the Chinese steel industry and some of the Eastern European steel industry. Some of the steel is really suspect, and it's made with sometimes questionable products. For example, our steel in Canada, when it's made, we ensure that there's no radiation sources in the steel and the scrap steel, for example, that's come in. In some places, who knows what goes into the mixture, to make the steel. So that's a concern that I think people should be aware of. And, so when you're sourcing stuff, be wary of where it's coming from. And that's an important thing for people to be aware of, I think.
So you're saying that sometimes there's radioactive material that's going into the mix?
Oh, there can be, sure. Ooh. Sure. There's supposed to be global standards to prevent that, but But in some of these countries, who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows where it comes from?
Well, one of the slogans that I've heard bandied around about bicycling is putting the fun between your legs, and that's not a nice concept to combine with radioactivity.
Wouldn't be a great one.
And I also, in my understanding, there's going to be some new legislation in Canada as far as the purity of metals. Is that kind of tied in with that in any way?
Not that anybody's talked to us about, but...
Hello?
Hello.
Hi there. Oh, you're Andreas.
That's me.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. We're playing phone tag. This is really exciting. We were just speaking with Steve Hunt from the Steelworkers, and we're so dynamic, we're going to completely mess with our listeners' minds and switch callers. So how are you doing today?
Things are good. It's a beautiful day. What more can you say?
Yeah, it is. The balm is finally here. Now, do you want to just give folks an idea about who you might be? You dropped in on us.
Sure. My name is Andreas Hessler. I've been a professional bike racer for the last 12 years. Went to the Olympics in 96 for the inaugural debut of mountain biking. A couple of national titles. It's all cross-country, not the downhill stuff you're thinking about.
Can I interrupt you for a second, Andreas, and just ask you if you wouldn't mind speaking up a little bit? Hello? Oh, I think we've lost him. Is there anybody there? If anyone is out there, call the station, 604-UBC-CITR. We're having a couple technical difficulties. Never fear. If it was a bicycle, we could fix it much faster, but don't worry, we'll be back on with you. So just to bring people up to speed, we are speaking today about bicycles and labor, and we were just speaking with the District 3 director for the steelworkers in Western Canada. And... So anyway, I just wanted to say that on the topic of buying ethically and you know, a lot of possibly, you know, these big boxes are a good place to avoid buying your bicycle from because, again, they're buying in bulk, they're buying overseas, and they're buying they're buying bicycles that are made in manufacturing conditions that would make you cringe if you knew about it. We're going to talk a little bit later about that. And... one of the other things that I wanted to say was that, in a sense, it's kind of our responsibility to be translating solidarity into action. So just as he was saying, it's not that it's against the workers who are actually making these items, and they're doing the best that they can. If we really care about them, in a sense, we can affect their working conditions in a really literal way by pressuring their employers. And the way to pressure their employers is to pressure the people or to raise awareness with the people who buy stock from them. So you can vote with your dollar, you can vote with your feet, and you can put them on pedals that were made in healthy, humane conditions. So is there somebody on the line? No. Well, I'm here, and David's here, and the sunshine is here, which is fabulous. So maybe we'll put on a song, and we'll see if we can't work our phone business out. Otherwise, if you do have anything to contribute to the conversation, please give the station a call. It's interesting, too, looking at some of the... I was reading an article about Huffy bikes. And if I can just say that it seems to me that Huffy may be one of the worst offenders as far as manufacturing goes. In the last 17 months... And this is an article that... that's a couple years old, but so recently there were 1,800 Huffy bicycle workers lost their jobs. Huffy shut down its last three remaining U.S. plants to outsource its production to China, Mexico, and Taiwan. And that's kind of sad. So that's one thing that Steve was referring to. The Huffy bike company controls about 80% of the U.S. bicycle market. In 1998, the Huffy Corporation had sales of about $584 million and a big profit. They were profiting about $97 million. So it's not like they're in trouble and that they're, you know, struggling to make ends meet and starting to outsource. Most of the Huffy... Oh, there we go.
Before I be beaten by this old team, or as I with my ever, my ever long.
And that's just the beginning of a song called Bittersweet by the Mardi Gras Brass Band. And in a sense, the topics that we're talking about are somewhat bittersweet because it is difficult, I think, for people to know what to do. We do all have a lot to think about as, you know, people who want to be ethical consumers and as people who want to be conscientious members of a global society. So we've got Steve back on the line. Sorry about that, Steve. We lost you. Hi there. Can you hear us?
Hi.
Super.
Hi.
Sorry about that. We lost you a little bit. It must be the radiation.
Must be. Eh?
So we were just talking about kind of other greater issues that have to do with some steelworker issues that are kind of tied in with cycling at large. And did you have anything that you wanted to kind of add to what we were talking about? Maybe some companies that are local that you know of that have been maybe negatively affected?
Well, not so much in bicycle manufacturing here on the West Coast. And as you said, there's some local artisans that do some pretty good work. And I know some local companies, like Norco still out here and some others. And
mm-hmm.
But I'd encourage people to support those people because there's workers there. And obviously the quality of the bikes are, I think, somewhat assured. So that's pretty good stuff. But generally, I think that's about it about bicycle manufacturing. I talk generally about the bigger picture about Canadian workers and how we're really being let down. And more topically on the West Coast is softwood lumber and raw log exports, which are just decimating this coast. Again, it's the same principle. Mm-hmm. Nobody's stopping the exports of logs and. Our sawmills are closing, and people are losing their jobs, and they're picking up the production in other countries. Same argument, exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. So, in a greater sense, what can people do? What can individuals do?
Well, I think get politically involved. Politicians, as you know, are responsive to people. So, the more people that take up the cause and get concerned about what's really happening. In our country, the more the politicians will pay attention to it. And currently, politicians are only looking or listening to big capital. That's it. And I think if we muster support and get people out there making noise, not only about bicycle manufacturing, but generally what's happening to our country, I think the better the further we advance our agenda, and our agenda is let's make good jobs in Canada and let's be responsible about it, with respect to all of our social causes, and I think we all do better because of it.
Mm-hmm. And in a sense, let's try to also push for those same working conditions that we are, in a sense, we're relatively unique as far as population goes in the world. I think, you know, having access to all of the services that we have access to, and those have been hard fought for and won, but maybe we can start to think about how it would be great if everybody could have access to those same things too.
Exactly, because it's the slippery slope we're on. Because as we lose jobs and employers come in and say we have to be competitive with other countries, guess what starts going? And we see that now. The attack on our medical system, for example, is pretty good. They say, you know, we have lineups. So, you know, just south of us in the States, there's 45 million Americans that don't have to worry about a lineup. They have no medical.
Right.
45 million people.
Right. And so also, I guess, if people are the letter-writing type, which I'm not, but I know some people who are, where should they maybe direct their letters to in the government?
Well, right now it would be Stephen Harper federally and Gordon Campbell provincially.
Okay, so pretty standard stuff.
Pretty standard stuff. Go to the top.
Okay. Well, listen, Steve, I really appreciate you talking to us. I know you've got to run, and thank you so much for helping us to kind of get the word out a little bit.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, that was really awesome. I know he's got to kind of dart across the Lower Mainland now and into one of the suburbs, so that was fabulous that he took the time to talk to us today. And so maybe let's go back to that wonderful song called Bittersweet, and it's by the Mardi Gras Brass Band. So...
got a special kind of love you should give me. Always kind of sad, but also kind of merry. Your little lips, they taste like coffee beans and cherry. Your specialty is the art of melodrama. Tears in your eyes anticipate your karma. Always kind of blue, but also kind of gay. Like a heat wave in November or snowflakes late in May. Bittersweet, this is the way. I need. Lonely is the night, and lonely will be the day, until you come and beg to me and promise me to stay. I take a walk to sneak around your place, and I see wind is blowing.
and welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. My name is Ifni, and I had a shot of whiskey, so that should help with the technical difficulties. I'm going to check my bicycle for radiation when I get home. How about you, David?
Oh, yeah, that's that freaked me right out.
So we're going to get to a bicycle traffic report today, and what we thought might be kind of cool is to have that report coming to us from Yaletown. And why did we choose Yaletown today, David?
Well, Yaletown used to be the town of Yale at the turn at where the CPR rail ended back in 18 whenever, and it was a town full of hard work and folk. And when the CPR line extended out to Vancouver, they moved their town to the end of the line there, and so it became Yaletown down there, and that's where they worked on the locomotives and so on and so forth. And then over time it became quite an industrial area because of its proximity to False Creek. So it's kind of interesting now that it's such a sort of rich neighborhood, and it comes from such a blue-collar background.
I think the technical term is shishi.
Shishi.
It's a shishi neighborhood,
yes,
now.
Shishi.
So coming to us live from Yaletown, we have Billy Bob. Billy Bob, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Ifni.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How's the sunshine?
The sunshine, well, there's no sunshine at the corner of Hamilton and Helmkin, which is where I am. I figure this is an epicenter of Yaletown, just because the buildings are in the way of the sun.
Would that be the armpit or the navel of Yaletown?
It's the navel, definitely.
Okay. And are you by yourself today?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I did have a shot of whiskey too earlier. It makes me fear the cars less when I drive my bicycle.
You drive your bicycle, do you? And they ride their cars.
Yeah,
was that
like
only
that.
One shot?
Yeah. After three shots, it reverts back to normal.
Now, people might know you from seeing you ride on your recumbent. You have a fabulous recumbent bicycle.
Yes, I have a recumbent. I have a grandpa bike. Well, I can't go through all my bikes. I have a lot of bikes.
We only have an hour show.
Yeah, okay. So I'm just riding a regular type normal bike today, if that makes any sense.
And what was it you told me once about recumbents?
They're the shit. That's what I say. The shizzle, you know.
Thanks.
I mean, you go recumbent, you just don't go back. Although I have gone back, so I don't really know what I'm talking about. But they're good stuff, yeah.
Sure, exactly. So, and I think the technical term is chisel. And so you are in the navel of Yaletown. We would really like to know how it looks out there to you from a cyclist perspective. What's going on down there?
Well, I'd like to first say that on the way here from Strathcona, passing the famous corner on Main and Union, there was at least 11 cyclists going through that intersection on one particular light. And the light before, there was at least 7. So we know that cyclists are out today. And, well, in Yaletown, I tell you, there isn't very much traffic. There's a lot of foot traffic and a few cyclists.
Okay. Now, how are the cyclists looking? Do they look happy? Do they look kind of tired from a day's work? They look hungry?
The little doggy in the front of the basket on the one bike looked pretty happy, and the owner was pretty happy, too. But, everybody, yeah, the people are riding some nice upright bikes comfortably and enjoying themselves, and not fearing any cars because, well, there really aren't any cars right now that I can see.
Nice. And we may want to mention, too, for cyclists who do happen to find themselves on a bicycle in Yaletown, the streets can be quite narrow, and oftentimes the drivers are not particularly attentive to the road because they're all scanning for parking in kind of a desperate way.
Or on their cell phones,
or both. Sometimes they're desperately scanning.
That's mostly what they're doing, so... But the streets are one way around here. Just don't go down the wrong way like I usually do, and you should be doing all right. And, there's big SUVs trying to crawl through these narrow lanes, trying to park. But I suppose they have the right to do that. What do you think?
Well, it's something of a free country. I mean, ethically they don't, but I suppose at this point logistically and legally they do. But the times they are a-changing.
Well, I have a pocket full of nails, so maybe I can, like, make
Robert,
a traffic
Robert.
Jam. So, and there's somebody on their phone pulling the left, but I think they're doing all right. I mean, you know, they have a driver's license, it seems.
Can I ask you, are you keeping a tally of small, tiny, inbred dogs?
The only dog I saw was the one in the front of the basket. I think the others may be frightened by the lack of traffic, I think.
Huh, or by the large approaching SUVs.
Yeah, not too many large SUVs today. A lot of minivans. Just regular people down in Yaletown today. Not too snobby, I don't think. It looks quite nice.
Well, that's good. And, yeah. I mean, the sunshine has a transformative, a very tonic effect on Vancouver, I think. It makes everybody relate to one another in a kind of a happy way.
Yeah, a lot of people walking around, that's for sure. There are just hundreds, or, well, dozens anyways. Hmm.
And so, one of the nice things about Yale Town, too, is that a lot of people do walk in that neighborhood, and that's kind of nice.
It's very nice. And there's a nice shrimp going on at the restaurant behind me, and they haven't really offered anything, but, I mean, I can't really blame them. They seem to have a nice little group going there.
Well, I tell you what.
And I'm sure they walk down.
Well, I tell you what, Billy Bob, why don't you tell them that the Pedal Revolutionary Show is doing restaurant reviews and that you're there on official business and give you a shrimp.
Well, I'm thinking of just maybe grabbing one of their glasses of beer on the and just running away with it.
Are you on a crime spree in Yale Town? Is this what this is all about?
Well, it all seems so calm and nice. I figured, you know, maybe I should
spice it up a little bit.
Something. Yeah. You know, maybe I should ride my bike one way down the street. I mean,
wow. That's pretty saucy behavior. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I don't condone that kind of riding. In fact, I don't really condone any kind of riding that I might do myself, but that's a whole other story.
And you're actually a very laid-back rider. Your style, I think, is quite calming to everyone around you, contrary to maybe my riding style. But I've always really liked how you kind of groove back. And do you think that's something that is a result of riding recumbent? Does it kind of travel with you in that way and make you more laid-back?
The recumbent did mellow my riding out considerably, you know, hitting cars and yelling and doing that middle finger weird thing that people do. I kind of calmed that down. And I also think of the fact that since my riding is a little bit erratic, I don't know if I have too much place telling other people how to drive.
So you're saying...
I don't know. And I do like to, you know, unless my life is in terrible danger, then I really just kind of brake, go around, do my little maneuvers. I don't worry too much about the cars. Some people worry a little bit more, but mm-hmm. I think I'm doing all right. I'm mellowing it out in my middle age.
Did we just hear a Harley go by or something? What was that?
It's guy on a Harley, yeah. It was pretty much just a guy on a Harley.
Does he look like a punk?
He had a backpack on. I don't know what that meant.
Maybe it had school books in it. Well, listen, I really appreciate you giving us the lowdown in the Yale Town, and thank you so much for telling us the ins and outs of the naval.
You're welcome, Ifni.
Thanks, Billy Bob. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was great. And yeah, so again, to remind everyone, we have called for an end to the finger on the streets of Vancouver. You may want to think of more creative gestures. The thumbs up, the thumbs down, the salute. I've started using the salute. I often wear a little Swiss nurse's cap, and that kind of lends me a bit of an official stance. One thing while we're on the topic that I wanted to mention, as far as today's safety tip goes, I'd like to, as Robert said, you know, a lot of people are talking on their cell phone and turning left. Really do be careful. You should always kind of ride without assuming that other people can see you, even if you think that they can. You may want to be wary of drivers who may forget that they have indeed been blessed with two pedals, sometimes even three, and they sometimes run stop signs. My neighbor was unfortunately hit by someone who ran a stop sign the other day, and my condolences go out to him. Be sure if you're approaching a four-way intersection that you make eye contact with these drivers. Even if it's your turn to go, you're not in an armored vehicle like they are, and the stakes are higher for you. So make eye contact with them. You may want to consider using a hand signal to indicate what you're going to do. I often do a traffic cop style thing. I use the hand up, open palm, stop in your tracks kind of motion. That one's very useful. You consider wearing light colored gloves at night. But again, don't assume that they see you, and be ready to stop in case they forget that there are other people in the universe besides themselves. Bicycles are the ninjas of the street fighting kingdom, and just don't assume that someone can see you, because we travel relatively lightly. So let's talk a little bit more about labor and bicycles and issues of that nature. David, did you want to kind of fill us in on some other aspects of what we're discussing?
Well, I think there are two interesting bicycle companies in North American history. One is Seekine, or Seekin, or however you want to pronounce it.
Sekine, according to the typical Romanji pronunciation.
And then there's Burley in the States. First of all, Seekine has an interesting history, as it was a answer to the tariffs they put on bicycles back in the 70s in Canada. Seekine was a Japanese company that couldn't afford to ship their bikes over, so the tariff did work. So they decided to open up a factory in Manitoba, somewhere in the north, and I totally forget the name of the little town. But they operated for a while there, and Seekine was known as one of the best bicycle manufacturers in Canada during the 70s. Of the research I've done on Seekine, some of the bicycle assemblers from local stores said it was one of the finest bikes that they could ever assemble, and that they could see that the people that made the frames really took the care of making it. And as we know, mm-hmm. Seekine, I think in the 80s, was phased out and they're no longer around. Mm-hmm. Then we look at Burley, which is in Eugene, Oregon. And having researched for this show, I sadly found out that this great workers' cooperative no longer exists.
In that form anymore.
In that form, yeah. They sold out to a private investor, and they no longer sell bicycles. They just sell the trailers that they were once famous for. Mm-hmm. And Burley's got a long history. It started by a man named Alan Scholes in 1969 in Fargo, North Dakota. He had a bicycle shop there, and his girlfriend made panniers out of cloth. And so he sold these handmade bike bags in North Dakota. And then finally in 1978, they had moved to Oregon and decided that neither him or her wanted to be the boss of the company, so they made it a workers' co-op. And they were like that for 20, 30-odd years. And then they started having difficulties with their cooperative and the fact that there was a heavy demand for their bicycles, mm-hmm. but they weren't able to supply it. And, you know, I imagine their pricing, they were trying to be competitive with China, but really I think it was more for keeping loyal to their fans. They had a very strong, loyal base of users of their product. Mm-hmm. And
there are another couple of Canadian manufacturers, too, who people might want to keep in mind. One is Rally, and the other is ProCycle. And ProCycle is still Canadian-owned and operated, and they do their manufacturing here. And actually, they bought Rocky Mountain, which is a local manufacturer of, or at least assembler, of mountain bikes.
That's correct. And so I think it's a shame that Burley had to sell it to a private investor, because now their trailers, while they're still made in Oregon, the materials for the trailer, the cloth or the vinyl, whatever they use, mm-hmm. is now outsourced. And so I imagine they find that overseas now. So another example of how the bicycle industry in North America is slowly falling apart.
Mm-hmm. And maybe let's also just mention briefly some of the conditions that bike workers overseas have to contend with. Oftentimes they work forced shifts, 13 and a half to 15-hour shifts. That'll be 7 a.m. to 7 p. to 11 o'clock p.m., sorry, 7 days a week. They are often at the factory for approximately 93 hours a week. And these stats come from a study that was put out regarding Huffy bikes made in China and sold at Kmart, Sears, and Walmart. And this is one particular bicycle factory called the Baoen Bicycle Factory, and that's in Shenzhen province in China. So Steve was alluding to, there's no social security, there's no health insurance. Everybody has to work mandatory overtime. They get two meal breaks a day. There's a lot of chemicals that come around. People who work in the welding departments get a bit of a higher pay because the heat is so intense. And same in the painting department. So they're actually making the lucrative wage of 41 cents an hour. And again, you know, it's unfortunate when we kind of enforce the items that we want to have cheaply, when we kind of enforce unfortunate working conditions on our fellow humans. So something to consider when you walk into bike shops. You may want to say, when they say, "Can I help you with something?" You say, "Yeah, I'm looking for a bike that's made in Canada. Kind of nice, at least made locally." I know that there was bike trailers as well, or is an interesting thing. There's a great company out of Iowa, right, David, that makes some pretty fabulous trailers.
That's correct. They they make these trailers that can hold about 300 pounds, and I don't know their website off the top of my head. And if somebody's listening, hopefully Ryan might be listening, who uses one of these trailers, could call in and let us know what the website is. But they're absolutely fabulous trailers. Fortunately for them, in Iowa, it's flat land. So I've seen pictures on their website where they have three of these trailers. They're about 5 feet long, hooked up to one another, and they're pulling about 1,000 pounds. They originally started off as a very, very small company doing their own moving, and somebody had said, these trailers, they work really, really well. And so then they started manufacturing them. I'm not sure whether or not they import their materials anymore, because I think they're gone on to a larger manufacturing. Mm-hmm. But they're all assembled by their own user, because they come in a box and you have to put it all together yourself.
Hmm. And I know that Ryan has used his bike trailer to pull a boat, which is kind of exciting. And I know that Free Geek used the same trailer a few weeks ago to pull something like, how many kilos was it?
Well, it was actually pounds. It was 240 pounds of office equipment or computer hardware on his trailer. And it worked quite well. And he didn't say that he felt that he was stressing any more than he normally would underload.
And one of the things that I wanted to say, too, on this topic, as far as kind of solidarity goes, there's a great quote that I read by a guy named Miles Magner, and he was a cyclist who, or he is a cyclist, he's still around, who sold bicycles for a number of years for mid-sized retailers out in the East, in Ontario and Quebec. And his view on the tariffs, if we were to be able to have these instituted to kind of protect and encourage local bicycle manufacturing, which in the end, of course, is less expensive because it saves on transportation and it leads to a more stable society and happier, more productive citizens. He said, you know, do we really want to race to the bottom? He thinks that a lot of cyclists believe that you need to act locally and think globally, and I think that's something that we could consider to be true about a lot of cyclists. And if you ask people why they bike, those reasons or those considerations should be kind of part of what people are undertaking when they decide to purchase a bike. And David made a really good point about reuse. We don't necessarily have to be buying brand new bicycles all the time. There are a lot of bicycles that just need a little bit of loving and attention, and that again saves in the energy expenditure across the board for everyone. So do consider buying a bicycle used from someone, or trying to learn more about bicycle maintenance so that you can increase the longevity of your own bicycle.
Two words, Craigslist.
Oh, yeah, Craigslist can be a really good way. And also local organizations like Our Community Bikes do sell used bicycles. And you can kind of go by word of mouth. I just want to mention a couple things before we play our last outgoing song. One is that Critical Mass is coming up the last Friday of this month. And just so that everybody knows, this month is the Pirate Ride. May means pirates. So you might want to start... You might want to start training your parrot to ride a bike. Let's go into a song.
I've got one picked already.
You do? Damn, I had one picked too. What's yours?
Well, I'm just feeling a little aggressive here, so I'm going to go for a band called This Bike is a Pipe Bomb.
Oh my God, I wanted to pick the same song. No kidding. Look, here, it's written down right here. It says, This Bike is track number 3. You rule. Excellent. What's the song called, David, Mr. Psychic?
16 tons.
16 tons. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. And again, send us an email, pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com, and tell us either how much you love your bike. Cheers.
he's all alone. Looks so happy, but he's far from home. I ring my bell and smile at him, then knock over his rubbish bin. My white bicycle. Head in disgrace, shines no light upon my face. Through the darkness we still see my white bicycle and me. My white bicycle. My white bicycle. Policeman shouts, but I don't see it.
I think my mind has gone.
My mind has gone.
stop and stare. They can't explain me sitting there in a corner, dark and damp, staring at a broken lamp. I'll get through the days.